Welcome to Dread, Fright, and Brew, where your favorite horror movies are paired with craft brews and ciders from the Pacific Northwest and beyond. Your hosts this evening are Aaron Hatfield, Grace Schrick, and Lee Despain. Fear goes better with beer.
Cucumber with mayonnaise and
the
I'm like,
power of cucumber compels you.
No, it does not compel me. Compels me to throw the hell up. That's what cucumber compels me to do.
Oh,
nice. Freaking foul. Hey, we finally got our ghost movie, though.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. So that's pretty exciting.
I'm super, super excited about that one that you actually said that.
I'm
distracted by magic boxes.
He's looking at porn.
No, I was trying to decide what it was we were supposed to watch.
We were,
and then it was like Night of the Comet, and I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, that was all right. I mean, it was fun in the 80s, but then when you said Story of Echoes, I was like, oh fuck yeah, our ghost movie finally.
Way better, yes.
Yeah, yeah, I was all set to do Night of the Comet this time around, but turns out it's not that good.
Because we could have done,
I didn't get a chance to watch it.
We could have done Hide and Seek too, which was that one with Robert De Niro and, what's her name? Oh wait, no. It was the one with Robert De Niro and Dakota Fanning, where she was little. And he was like was there a ghost in that one? Kind of similar, but not, I think, yeah.
What was that?
She played hide and seek.
It was a hide and seek? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Never saw it.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Like,
that
but if you said this one, I was like, theaters, oh, we actually had a bunch of different options.
Yeah, me too.
You know?
I saw it once.
But this one's really good. I've never seen the sequel, but I've seen this one.
Stir of Echoes. Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Which,
it's like an echo over and over.
Yeah, that's right. I hadn't seen it in so long.
I hadn't even thought about it in forever until...
It's been a very long time.
One was like, oh yeah, Aaron thinks we should maybe do Stir of Echoes. I was like, oh shit, I like that movie.
Well, we've been talking about we want to do a ghost movie. We want to do a haunting movie. And like when I think ghosts and haunting and all that kind of stuff, I think classic back in the day. So yeah. I think back to like The Changeling or House on Haunted Hill, like the original ones. You know, I usually think when I think of The Innocents with Deborah Carr. So I think of something that could be really boring.
I think of The Entity,
you know, depending
even though
on
that's,
today's audiences.
Even though that's a demon possession, I think of The Entity.
Oh, absolutely. I think I watch that like almost every Halloween just because it's still off-putting to this day.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever actually watched that one.
Was it Karen Black?
It's not Karen Black. It's, oh, I forgot her name now.
Hmm.
Isn't it the lady from Raiders of the Lost Ark?
No. That is Karen Black, isn't it?
No. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. Anyways, we'll edit this out because now we sound like a bunch of idiots.
Yeah.
No,
or maybe
we'll probably
everybody's going
to. You know how many times we say we're going to edit this out and it's right in there with us saying that? It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's called.
That's right. Every podcast ever.
Flavor.
It's called lazy editing.
Flavor. Flavor. Edit that.
Yeah. It's easier to be embarrassed by something.
It is
kind of a modern day ghosty movie.
Yeah.
I like that.
Actually,
one.
That one was really, really good.
Yep.
So everyone has their story of like The Sixth Sense or something like that, which we'll talk about here in a second, where they knew the ending to something was coming up, you know? And first off, anybody who says they knew the ending of Sixth Sense while they were watching the movie, you're totally for a little horseshit.
Yeah.
I don't think there's ever been a single person that actually saw that coming in the way this was coming. It's really cool to say you did.
That's also in the heyday of M. Night when he was doing his movies, because even Unbreakable, you didn't see that shit coming.
That was the big start.
You did not see that shit coming either.
No, you absolutely
did. He was very good in his first few movies of just throwing you the twist that you're like,
what's a twist?
Very true.
Exactly. But then people wouldn't continue with that. They're doing things where like, we're going to try a twist, but you're going to realize what it is not halfway through the movie.
That was the Others earlier, for me. You know? So I was about 15, 16, 17 minutes into The Others with my girlfriend at the time, and we're watching that, and I lean over, and I'm like, oh, I got it. It's this. And, you know, we're against spoilers, so I won't say it. But I lean over and tell her, and she's like, what? And then she, you know, picks up on what I was picking up on, and then that whole movie was ruined for both of us, and I was in a lot of trouble.
So I remember figuring out The Others pretty quick.
Just don't tell anybody.
But I still liked it, even though I kind of figured it out. I still thought
really
it was a
really
good story, and I liked what they were doing.
It totally is.
So, but yeah, no, that one was quite a bit more predictable.
It's also a Nicole Kidman movie I can tolerate.
Yeah.
She's not my favorite actress.
To Die For is pretty good.
That actually was good, too.
Yeah. The best, though.
And I really liked the Practical Magic. I thought that was really cool. Oh, I love that movie. I've seen that movie probably like 20 times.
Wow.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
You like Titanic 2?
I've seen Titanic more times than I should. I think I've seen it like 6 or 7 times. I did like it. It was a love story for the ages.
You didn't talk about Home Alone movie.
I am perfectly fine sitting over in silence and letting you movie. Sink like the Titanic on all that shit.
First of all, thank you very much.
Juan hates Moulin Rouge.
I've never seen it, and I refuse to see it.
Oh, it's super good.
I refuse to watch it.
It's super good.
Yeah. I bet you like Romeo and Juliet, too.
Actually, that was my least favorite.
Yeah,
of his.
That piece of crap.
Yeah, that's not one. That one wasn't great.
Exactly.
Like, you're talking about Leo and
my so-called life chick or whatever.
No.
I'm not sure that there's actually a Leo film that I like.
Dude, The Departed is really good. The Departed is really good.
Departed is super good. What about, he did that Blood Diamond one?
Blood Diamond.
That was pretty awesome. Oh, Inception.
Inception.
I did not care for fucking Inception.
Okay, so Blood Diamond was good.
It was tired.
Wait, Inception was tired.
That whole idea of dreamscaping and alternate realities and
Matrixes. Name 5 other movies
and,
with that.
The Matrix, Dreamscape. Hold on. Right off the top of my head.
There would have been no Doctor Strange without Inception, because there was a lot of visually stuff that was true. Just
I would have
like
preferred
that.
Doctor that's Strange over Inception.
Doctor Strange is really good. I love that movie.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm just saying, it did things Inception visually
was
tired. That...
It was tiring.
What the hell?
I like Blood Diamond, except for the whole Leo kept slipping in and out of his South African accent.
Well, yeah.
It was annoying the holy shit out of me.
Yeah.
Like, the movie was amazing, but I wanted to choke him out several times.
Oh, yeah. I think
because he would always do it at, like, really...
normal and acceptable reaction to Leonardo DiCaprio.
Really intense situations in the movie, and he would totally drop the accent.
Hey, what about... what's eating Gilbert Grape? Come on now.
I actually have never seen that
film. Probably.
I don't think any of us have seen
it. It's like his most, like, kind of nodded and lauded.
It's probably the only movie that he was good in.
It's quite possible. I have no idea. No, he's been good in a few things, not in everything.
Yeah. He's a good actor, actually. Well, you like Gatsby. You loved like Gatsby.
I haven't seen that one, but I did want to.
Baz.
She loves that movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Back to The Sixth Sense.
Yes. Back to the... Wait. Okay.
So.
Juan's like, what?
Wait, huh?
So, and we'll get into the history of Stereo Echoes here in a little bit, but it's coming out in 1999. They just wrapped filming. I want to say they wrapped filming early in 99, like January, February, something like that. Mm-hmm. So they wrap up filming, they've got their final cut, everything's done, and they come across the script for a little movie called Sixth Sense, which is being shot as they speak. It's just about to wrap filming as well. And
who's the they?
Who is
The filmmakers.
The filmmakers of Stereo Echoes.
Okay, sorry. Because you said Sixth Sense was finished filming and everything, and then they found the script of Sixth Sense.
No. Oh, sorry. Stereo Echoes.
Stereo Echoes was all finished up, and they found the Sixth Sense script. Okay.
Yes, there it is.
There we go. Right. And, like, something got missed there.
I'm sure it did. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's all this Diet Dr. Pepper I pre-gamed with.
Says Dr. Pepper and rum.
I wish. That'll be after. So they get the script, and they go, uh-oh, both of our movies are supernatural kind of ghosty movies. Both of our movies have a very young boy as kind of a lead. Both of our movies are about a young boy that sees things with a certain perception, and he sees the same things. And they went, this is bad. So the director / writer, David, I don't know if it's Cop or Cope or how you say his name.
I heard it on an interview, and it was not at all like I thought it would be. Not Cope, not Cohen, not...
Kwepi?
Yeah,
something like
some
that.
Weird...
It's K-O-E-P-P. Anyways, we'll call him Cope. We'll call him K-Dog.
K-Dog.
I'm going to go with K-Dog.
All right.
K-Fed. So, director K-Dog and Kevin Bacon and some of the other people involved in the movie...
Who's Kevin Bacon?
...find out this is coming. He's this guy. I don't know.
He's done a thing or two.
He likes to dance.
Yeah, just a few things.
I think he likes to dance.
80-something things, it turns out. Freaking Kevin Bacon. 90? I don't know. They decide we got to release our movie now, so it comes out first. So let's release in like April or May. So they go to the studio, tell the studio all about it, hand the script for Sixth Sense over to their studio, and go, this is coming out and it's going to kill us because it's super good. And the studio execs at the time were like, nah, it's totally different. And Sixth Sense looks totally slow and totally boring, and we're way ahead of the game on this. Just sit down and shove it. So, as it turns out, as it turns out, Stir of Echoes comes out in September following the Sixth Sense release in August. Mm-hmm. So, literally 4 weeks later.
Exactly.
So, all of the early reviews of the Stir of Echoes are basically saying, like, oh, yeah, imitation is the finest form of flattery and da 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 da. First off, neither one of them copied each other at
all. No, they didn't.
That's clearly obvious. But what a way to like sink your movie right from the get-go. And they are bitter about it. You read anything from K-Dog or Kevin Bacon at this point, and they are still not happy that such a good movie was totally fucked in the box office, basically.
Exactly.
Well, it fucking blew me away when I was looking at box office and the cost of it, which was about $15 million to make Stir of Echoes and, like, I don't know, $40 million to make Sixth Sense. And the amount of money it made was only – I mean, it was still only in, like, the two-digit millions. Mm-hmm. With when you have movies now that don't have the range or the depth or the ingenuity or the originality that are making billion – just blows me a fucking way.
It's costumes. People like capes, dude.
People fucking love capes. People except like capes for and in the Incredibles
and shit.
Yeah, I just saw that and I was just looking at the differences and I was going, wow, what a huge, I mean, the industry, like,
and you kind of have to wonder where that budget goes.
Well, the industry like sports players is out of control.
Athletes?
Oh, yeah.
Athletes, them guys.
Redonkulous. Yes. Yeah. You know, it's just those playground peoples.
Fucking sport ridiculous.
Sportball guys.
I just hope that the money in today's movies are going to the technicians and the special effects and the practical effects because the fucking actors don't.
They get like a high five.
Yeah, they don't need shit.
I think first and foremost, it pours into your big name actors. It pours into your Tom Cruise's. It pours into your, you know, your Brad Pitt's, that kind of thing. That's first.
Tom Cruise is too tiny to get any money.
It's just all about the studio. You know where they rolling its bankroll.
The others get their glory is they get the end credits, which they make you sit through for a tidbit for fucking 15 damn minutes.
Yeah. I kind of like the end credit things and the mid credit things.
I hate waiting for them. I want to fast forward it every time I'm there, going, let's get to the very end.
But one of the funny things about movie making is that you've got these like set production guys or whatever.
I don't care who the best boy grip is or whatever it is. Shit.
But I've been on the studio backlot tour at Universal Studios and I've seen the cars parked.
Oh yeah,
in the actor spaces, and I've seen the cars that are parked in like the key grip spaces, and the gaffer space,
the key grips. Driving like a freaking Dodge Dart or like a Pinto.
Yeah, if it's not his 10-speed that he like rode in from like the outside parking lot because they wouldn't let him back
there. Because you will not have a movie without a gaffer.
Man, I'm telling you, you will not. You need to. The one that needs to be paid the highest is Best Boy. I mean, how do you earn that title, Best Boy, if you're not the best boy?
It's like getting a mug that says World's Greatest Dad. You know, it's like the Best Boy.
Yeah, it's like maybe they get a mug that we don't know about. It's fine.
Ooh, that's
cool. Might be their bonus.
I just love how
coffee
like,
out of every day.
We spent 3 months developing this, you know, part of the suit. You worked for 3 months on one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And Joe fucking swinging sack.
Yeah.
Comes in and earns $8.5 million for 2 minutes of airtime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then bitches about the suit because it's uncomfortable and it's too hot and doesn't like the way it fits.
Yeah. Hey, figure your shit out, Hollywood.
Robert England didn't bitch about getting his makeup put on, I'll tell you that much.
No, and you know who the Robert England of today is? Because that man showed up on every television show, every, whatever, news morning thing he could. He had a 9769. We've talked about all this.
Exactly.
Chris Pine?
No, man, it is Deadpool.
Chris Evans.
One of the Chris's.
Not Chris Evans.
Chris.
Ryan Reynolds.
Yes. You idiot.
Chris Evans, one of the Chris's. This guy doesn't even know which costume goes to who.
That is Iron Man, or excuse me, Captain America, first of all. The man with the shield.
Yeah, it's your man crush.
Oh, Lordy.
I knew, though.
Well, he's going to have Captain America. Thor.
And Chris Hemsley. There's Chris's. Yeah.
There are Chris's, but neither one of them is dead.
No, but you know you're totally right.
That guy puts in his work.
He does all the cornball, like, commercials.
Japanese television.
Oh, my God. He does some of the funniest shit.
Four Chris's.
Yeah.
What? We still talking about Chris's?
Oh, we're having our own podcast.
We're
going
back over to Deadpool,
Welcome to the Four Chris's show.
Well, who is four? I heard Chris Pratt. So
Chris Pratt. Chris Pratt. Chris Hemsworth. Chris Pine. Chris Evans.
Who's that?
That's James Tiberius Kirk.
Yeah, the one from the new Kirks.
The new Star Trek.
Yeah. That no, we're talking in superhero
He's a superhero of the future.
Chris is. There's probably more than four.
He is the superhero of the future.
James Tiberius Kirk.
Star Trek in with freaking Avengers. Fucking what nerds. Are you doing?
He is James Tiberius Kirk though.
This is the nerdiest, dumbest fight I think I've ever been in. Dude.
And it happens daily across the nation. I'll tell you.
We're not talking around here.
Oh my God.
Okay, no more words. We're talking about a different movie today. Actually, you know what? Let's talk about beer. Let's
do that. That's what we
need. Now that gets us back
on
track.
From the nerd talk.
It's the heat. It is.
I don't think it is. I'm pretty sure you ramble about this shit all the time.
I am sweating like a whore in church, dude. I swear to God. It is too hot. Fuck.
That's fair. I love that joke.
That's fair. Mm.
This
thing's got some
is aggressive.
Is that root beer?
Wow.
I don't know. Look at you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of when you make a beer float.
Ooh.
Yeah.
When you first drop that ice cream in, that beer goes nuts.
Wow. Root beer flavor.
Because I've got
this
like
is, some aggressive head, and I know how to pour a beer.
Yeah,
I don't know, dude. Judging by this,
thank you.
But it looks good, though.
It's almost
it's
as
like
heady
thick.
As when we put Dr. Pepper in with Abyss.
Ooh, smells good too.
I'm sorry. Did you actually want alcohol bomb. Tonight?
Yes, and saying. Don't say when we did that.
You, did
you
it,
were
man.
You were 100% behind it once you tasted it.
Well, he just wanted to see me beat the shit out of you.
Yeah. That, you know, that is a pretty strong motivation for a lot of things.
Kumbaya. Let's just get
kumbaya when you put Dr. Pepper in Abyss.
Nobody puts Dr. Pepper in Abyss.
Nobody puts
By
baby
way,
in
I have
the
a
Abyss.
Third, yeah, this
baby in
the
Abyss.
So.
Okay.
Boy, my dog really likes that.
Can I try the beer no paper?
Good luck. She seems pretty intent on having some more.
What is this beer that we're so
this
heady
is
about?
McKenzie Brewings. They are in Eugene, Oregon.
Huh.
It is a Cascadian Dark Ale or a Black IPA if you're
yes.
racist. And it's called Unforgivable Darkness is what we're drinking.
So some cool things about this beer. McKenzie Brewing is basically old school Oregon craft beer.
Yeah, I was really surprised to learn all this.
Like, back in the day of, like, when your craft breweries were McMinniman's, Widmer.
Portland Brewing.
Bridgeport
popping around that? Well, no.
I think Hair of the Dog, maybe.
That was the early days, though. So we're talking...
Yeah, but, like, early
we're talking,
Bridgeport.
Like, right when they were getting laws passed, like, 85,
just
86.
Just barely, yeah. Like, this opened up... Steel Hood opened up in 91.
Yeah, they started brewing in 90. And then
so
opened in
basically
91.
It was Steelhead Brewing, and then it kind of morphed into McKenzie Brewing. Is
yeah,
that
it,
kind
apparently
of what it was?
It's Steel. It's still.
It was still
Steelhead,
technically.
It's still Steelhead at their facility. They have two facilities. One's in Eugene,
mm-hmm.
and they were the second craft brewer to open in Eugene. And one of like the original like 10 in the state
mm-hmm.
after those laws were passed. And they now have a second one down in Cali somewhere.
Really?
Yeah, Steelhead.
Which is Steelhead. But the brewer is like a restaurateur?
That's a word.
Sure.
That's a thing.
See, words are hard.
A restaurant-y dude. He's like a restaurant-y dude.
He
likes the foods and shit.
He hangs out with K-Dog and he's a restaurant-y dude.
Yeah, he's straight GR.
He's like
yeah,
this total Gordon Ramsay dude. He like makes
Muppet.
Food and shit.
So their focus still revolves around those two restaurant/breweries, but they decided they wanted to put things in bottles and ship it around and distribute it. So they started a self-distribution company called McKenzie Brewing. So
yeah.
Kind of weird. I don't know if
I know,
that's the only beer
there's
you're ever
a lot
make.
Of like weird gray area where
yeah.
it's just like, wait, what?
And are McKenzie, you... I don't think exports anything else or distributes anything else. I mean, I think it's just Steelhead, so why not just call it Steelhead? Unless they thought maybe that's too fishy and
yeah,
it'll sound too much like fish. Well, no, they weren't around. I don't know.
Well, there's probably,
the
I don't know
it.
That they could, yeah. unless they franchised and were like the exact same, I don't think they can have the same brewery name.
Oh, as
a
distribution.
Different, as a distribution company and as, there's weird, stupid copyright laws.
Well, and who knows what it was like back then.
I'll bet you they're listening to this podcast right now and we just have them call in. Give us a little
yeah,
answer.
Yeah, I'm sure they're totally listening to us.
Lines are open.
Live.
We'll take the 10th caller. You win a trip to McKenzie Brewing.
Yeah. All you got to do is drive there. We just give you the hours they're open.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? Exactly.
Transportation and...
But it's kind of a cool, old school landmark of Oregon beer.
Or a business card.
Yeah, I was very
surprised.
And
it's one that you don't usually hear of for being one of the oldest in the
yeah.
state. Like, everybody knows Widmer and Bridgeport and Portland and McMinniman's, but not everybody's
Dude,
heard of McKenzie.
Since 86.
I guess, I mean, I didn't even realize until I was looking up the dates, I didn't realize that it was that old.
Yeah, I had no idea.
I mean, I had heard of McKenzie. I've had their beers. I lived in Eugene for a while. Like,
okay.
I know of McKenzie, but I didn't realize that they were, like, one of the classics.
They were a pretty new discovery for me, and Lee and I actually had gone to John's Market one day looking for beers for the podcast and things, and so I just decided to pick it up and try it to see if it was any good.
I'm gonna say, like, this is I've never had one of their beers until this now, and it's actually pretty good.
Yeah. So they won me over with that, and then they had this fun beer, and I was like, someday that's going to be perfect, and it kind of went on the back shelf, and I had no idea of the history. I thought, oh, this is going to be another one of those things where it's some, like, you know, brew for hire, something, something, but no, there's tons of history in these guys.
Old school Eugene.
Second in Eugene only to the McMiniman brothers.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
When they opened in Eugene.
They've been flying under the radar for that long.
Yeah, it's
so the particular beer we're doing is Unforgivable Darkness. Cascadian Dark Ale. CDA, Black IPA, whatever you want to call it. There's epic battles in the beer world about what we call that. And the Northwest kind of coined the phrase Cascadian Dark Ale.
Yeah.
The Brewers Association will not recognize it as an official beer style, so it pisses everyone off. Yeah. They call it Black IPA.
There's this whole big thing
where people get pissed off and fight back and forth, and it's kind of hilarious. So I like that they actually call it Cascadian Dark Ale.
Because it's a very Northwest thing. One day they'll give it a category. If you can give hazy IPA as a category in your beer journey,
well, the thing is,
that's also getting a lot of flack.
It's not that it's not a category. It's that it's not called what the Northwest wants it to be called. It's called Black IPA.
Hey.
Because it's a subcategory of IPA. It's not its own beer.
We are the kings of beer here. So we
That's the thing call is the shots. We sure as shit think we are.
Well, we are.
But the kings of beer rules disagree.
The old regime.
Who voted for all these people? Who put these people into office?
They took it. Like the knights of old. They didn't just wake up at night. You just took knighthood.
Yes, I'm sure the Brewers Association jousted to get into office.
They should have.
That would have been pretty badass. Well,
I've got enough armor and swords in this house that we could probably get some stuff changed.
Shit, I bet Papazian would joust someone.
Let's do it.
So basically the side, you know, the little descriptor, rich black Cascadian dark ale brewed with numerous varieties of hops grown throughout the Northwest. The path of the sun is creeping further south and the nights have grown longer and colder. The darkness is inevitable and unforgivable.
Yeah.
It's almost like something to look for in beer labels now is because we've popped off quite a few cool little sayings and blurbs and taglines. And that's kind of like a cool little thing to kind of look for now. I do anyway, whenever I see.
Well, and we put a decent amount of thought, you know, I mean, some of these are pretty easy for us. And then other ones, like we really think about for quite some time, mm-hmm. like when we did structures isolation and those sorts mm-hmm. of things, you know, we go through probably five or six other options before we finally settle and go, this is the one.
There's a lot of Aaron and I texting back and forth. Ooh, what about this?
Yeah.
Ooh, I found this thing. Yeah. Ooh, look at this label.
Exactly. So this one, kind of really spoke to me on a lot of levels, not only because what we're dealing with in this film is like an unforgivable crime. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that can't be forgiven and certainly hasn't been forgotten.
The darkness.
And it comes back to haunt Kevin Bacon's character for that very reason. But yeah, it's all about that darkness and that just kind of...
it's kind of letting the darkness in and... kind of opening yourself up to viewing.
He really had to go some horrible places to help resolve this situation.
It's like all his life he has known it as a black IPA, and then suddenly somebody's opening his mind and he's saying, oh, it's actually a Cascadian dark ale.
It's kind of like that.
Kind of.
Yeah. Like that. Just with I guess a little bit more.
If you've never had a Cascadian dark ale.
Almost murder rape and murder. Rape and
exactly.
Ghosts.
But pretty close.
And possession,
I guess we should actually explain what a Cascadian dark ale is if nobody knows.
Go for it.
In case you haven't had one, because it is kind of a rando beer style that's not always around.
One of my favorites.
We've actually done one before. We did Sinister Black, mm-hmm. Which is in that same category. So basically, it's essentially a black IPA, which... it's the color of kind of a darker beer, but with the hot profile of an IPA. So it's kind of that hybrid where it's a little lighter bodied like an IPA would be, bitter like an IPA, but you still get those roasty, toasted, kind of caramely darker notes. This one it finishes a little astringent, which is not surprising for CDAs. That's kind of a normal thing. Mm-hmm. Some of them can be really harsh. This one actually is not super aggressive.
I've had some like it sometimes.
I've had some really gnarly ones that pretty much give you that kind of that ashy, like you licked an ashtray finish.
Yeah. But I like getting that roasted, toasted quality. I like getting the coffee and chocolate. I like getting all of that stuff with the real harsh bitter.
It's really easy to make it too bitter or too harsh where it just tastes like a mess. But this one's actually pretty well balanced as far as
CDs Yeah, and go. You even still get some of the citrus from the hop in this one, which I really like.
You can definitely tell it's that kind of Northwest hop profile.
Absolutely. It's very good. I enjoy it quite a bit.
Okay, there's my little nerd thing on CDs.
Well, now and we can go back the to our... bitterness of this beer style also lent me to want it for this movie, because again, this movie is about a haunting, a man that is being tormented to solve something from someone who has passed on.
Yeah.
And this ghost is pretty bitter about the whole fucking thing, and is even willing to, like,
right to be,
endanger this guy and everyone around him to get the message across. Mm-hmm. So I liked the whole kind of that bitter, that aggressiveness of this beer also representing this movie in that way.
Yeah, for sure.
This might be going too far ahead. I don't know, but this isn't the first movie that we've seen where, you know, a ghost, you know, meets its demise, the host or whatever human met its demise. What the fuck am I trying to say?
Nobody really knows.
I don't know. All right, we're
just going to
move on.
Demise. The demise. Yes. Jesus Christ.
His end of life.
End of life.
End of life.
End of line.
Unfairly. And so they've come back and they're like, meh, right? But this one.
That's exactly how they do it.
How
yeah. I want to see that movie.
We got to make this right.
I think that pretty much all ghost stories are their ghosts because their life ends in a way that wasn't meant to be.
Right.
If you think about it.
But yeah, this one is. Someone needs to pay. There was usually
exactly. I haven't seen one ghost story yet that.
But this particular
somebody
ghost.
Died peacefully and just came back to fuck everything up. Yeah. Like, that's not.
Be
that's
hilarious.
Not fun. That'd be really funny.
I died of overeating. Now I'm just fucking kind of angry about it.
Yeah, exactly.
But this particular ghost has to get its message across a little bit differently, because this person that died wasn't fully, like, mentally, developed. So when you think about it, we're dealing with a handicapped ghost. And how does that ghost...
I see. So the ghost itself doesn't come at this with, like, say, the finesse or the balance that...
Yeah,
other ghosts we've seen do. It's just kind of like...
You didn't really see it that way.
Well, it just occurred to me. Yeah, like, yeah, it was.
I just wanted to do it again.
That's why I brought it up. Because it's like, most ghosts know what the fuck they need. But this ghost is kind of like...
No, see, you know? I don't see it like that at all.
Yeah, so does it get its own special
spot at the cemetery?
I don't know that I really...
I'm just wondering, because if it is like that, does it have its own special spot?
I don't really agree with the ghost, the girl was developing.
You get a plot at the very front of the cemetery.
Well, the girl was mentally retarded.
Yeah, and they used the R word a bunch of times in there, and they call her slow, they call her all these things. The actress did not portray that.
She didn't portray that.
Maybe it wasn't written.
And I don't know how much of that was just bullies being jerks because she's quiet and socially awkward.
That's the main
thing. Or how much of it is that she actually had a developmental disability.
It seemed much more like she was awkward.
Yes. I feel like she's just super awkward and didn't know what was going on, and like the total like introvert.
Yeah, because she was a 17, 18-year-old, lady, girl, who sort of had that trusting, like, capacity of like a 10-year-old, where 10-year-olds know that something's not right, but
so it could. It's I feel like it's kind of a combo.
So when you die, do you then become a smart ghost and not have to deal with these handicaps? Or?
Well, here's something I think is kind of cool in this: is that in most ghost stories, person dies, now they're a ghost because a traumatic event happened and their energies are left behind. You know, the whole ghost thing.
Supposedly, they can't move on.
But
until
everybody sees
it.
Like, people don't go to the old spooky house because there's ghosts there. Or like, we don't go in the basement because we hear noises down. Like, it's a thing that occurs. I like in this that nobody has any idea this house has a ghost in it until Kevin Bacon's door is opened, and we'll get into a little bit of that.
Which was a neat little way
to do that. But you had to be a specific person to even be able to...
I think the little boy was seeing her before that, though.
Because it's his gift because is hereditary.
He's open to it. Yeah. It
should be.
His door hasn't closed.
I've read the book that this is based on. So this is based on a Richard Matheson book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read that.
Richard Matheson, I mean, oh my God. Fantasy, sci-fi, horror writer. He did some crime dramas. He did some Western stuff. He did some Army stuff. I mean, he's written a lot of things. A very prolific writer. I think he's written over 30 books or something. But he's a sheer literary genius. He has received the Bram Stoker Lifetime Achievement Award, the World Fantasy Lifetime Achievement Award. He was inducted into the Sci-Fi Hall of Fame, and he got the Visionary Saturn Award, like, just right after he died, like, I don't know, 5-6 years ago when he died. So... the dude has written some amazing stuff, and we have seen a lot of movies based on his books.
Yeah. Well, and even the director, who was a writer, mm-hmm. has an impressive resume with Jurassic Park and Spider-Man and Xanthura and a lot of other, like, writing.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. Carlito's Way and Mission Impossible, the original one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the director is a really good writer. But Richard Matheson wrote the book The Omega Man. Mm-hmm. Which was then a Charlton Heston movie, yep. and then eventually I Am Legend with Will Smith, mm-hmm. same story. He wrote Duel, which was a early Steven Spielberg movie that he did. He wrote Legend of Hell House, or he wrote the story that Legend of Hell House is inspired by, with Roddy McDowall back in the day. Mm-hmm. What Dreams May Come, that Robin Williams movie, that's based on a Matheson book. Somewhere in Time, the old Christopher Reeve romance that's pretty heralded.
That was an awesome movie.
He wrote 16 episodes of Twilight Zone. He has written a lot of stuff that people have copied and emulated and redone and remade multiple times since I think he started pumping this out in the 50s. Oh, wow. But this book was written in 1958. So the story that we saw here was actually thought up in pretty close similarity to how it plays out here. 50 years ago. 60 years ago, I guess it is now.
Well, which is what we were saying. I was listening to the podcast Wait Till Dark, and at one point we had said movies like The Stranger and Hush and things like that were really innovative and really took the story of Wait Till Dark and like really expanded it. And we were like, yeah, look how much the storyline has developed or the writing style has developed. But they were still doing this back in... what, 1907? When was Wait Till Dark's 1960-ish?
I want to say late 60s, like 66, 67, 68, somewhere in there, I think.
And it occurred to me that it's like, well, it's not that these people came up with something new and really honed it now. Is that it was done so well and so out of its time back then. And you don't realize how many things actually... aren't out of their time. They were written back then, and that was brilliant writing back then, and that was
true.
The same kind of stuff that we're doing now. Just
well, and people think of like Stephen King as like a classic horror writer. And I'm like, okay, no, he's a very modern horror writer, and his movies are still very much a part of the modern horror age. I mean, these are the guys,
Yeah. So what we go back and we look at and say, man, they were so ahead of their time and so yada yada, and it's like, well, no, they were. They were just writing stuff of the time, I think.
Absolutely, and I think so also. But I've read the book that this is based on, and it follows fairly closely with this, although there is not nearly as much focus on the little boy. He's there, and he's kind of – he has the same ability to, like, see this ghost also, and that's just to kind of let you know
shit too.
That it's passed on hereditarily. But
well, I love at the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah, he did a good job.
You know something's – up when he looks at the camera and he goes, how does it feel to be dead?
Yeah, like the opening shot.
Oh,
yeah.
Fuck, okay.
And that's another thing I like about this movie is that it doesn't beat around the bush and it doesn't go through that whole thing of like, well, are you just seeing something?
Yeah, there's no real slow burn here. There?
Like, they're just pretty much like, hey, this kid's talking to a dead person.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like...
or things he is.
Leading up to how he's talking to a dead person, who it is,
Yeah.
And then trying to,
Well, I discovered something interesting about... watching this particular movie on the YouTube because I thought I had it on, but I didn't, and so I didn't have time for you to burn a copy for me.
Sure.
So I popped it on YouTube and tried to bring it up, and I found the full movie, which is very hard to do on the YouTube.
Yeah, absolutely, it can be, yeah.
But what people are doing to get around it is they do like a quarter scale screen on a larger screen with some sort of background on it, mm-hmm. and then it's played at 1.5 speed.
So
I watched the whole movie on 1.5 speed with Kevin Bacon talking like he's taking helium and he's on
movie. Oh, goodness. Right? It's streaming on Shudder, everyone, so
don't be Lee.
Go to Shudder, pay the $5, watch it on there.
Of course, I've seen it before, but it was really interesting because it takes the edge off of the horror side just a smidge.
Well, I would imagine.
Yeah. I was like, why is Kevin Bacon talking
so weird?
Well,
way back in the day when I was reviewing DVDs and Blu-rays and stuff for Underland Online, I had so many. I mean, we were getting, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 things a week to review, and they start piling up, and you want to get caught up. And so I used the PlayStation's 1.5 speed to watch back a lot of things. But the nice thing about the PlayStation is they didn't change the pitch.
Yeah, it's much better than
yeah. What? So the music stayed intact, the feeling of the movie stayed intact. But yeah, if you're watching Alvin and the Chipmunks, it's not going to be as scary. Yeah,
it wasn't quite that bad, but you could tell it was like either Kevin Bacon was trying to have like a weird like accent, like back Eastern accent or something, okay. but no, he was just talking slightly faster.
So Kevin Bacon, it was funny earlier that Juan says, Kevin Bacon, who's that?
Oh, shit. Because
we all know about the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon and how it's a play on the 6 degrees of separation, meaning that, you know, no one in the whole world is more than 6 steps removed from one another if you compared them. And there's a whole game that cinephiles play where you give them an actor and then you have to connect Kevin Bacon to that actor within 6 moves. Have you guys ever done this or played this?
Yeah.
We do it at the Nerd Out a couple times, and I guess Josh at the Nerd Out is really super good at it. But I found an app.
Sir, oh my God. 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
And it's called 6 degrees. But it's not just Kevin Bacon. You can put in anybody. But I have preloaded it with Kevin Bacon, and we're going to give this a real quick couple minutes shot to see if you guys can stump the app and come up with someone, an actor or actress, who is more than 6 degrees removed from Kevin Bacon. So I know I'm putting you on the spot. You had no idea I was going to pull this out. But
James Spader.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's the first one. Here we go. James Spader. Here we go. James Spader was in Wolf with Peter Garrity, who was in Sleepers with Kevin Bacon. That's a 2.
Damn.
James Earl Jones.
Oh, all right.
All right. Yeah. All right. Thulsa Doom don't hang with no bacon.
James Earl Jones.
Dude, everybody wants the piece of the bacon, dude. Come on now.
All right, here we go. James Earl Jones. James Earl Jones was in True Identity with Austin Pendleton, who was in Starting Over with Kevin Bacon. This is another 2 degree separation.
Kevin Bacon could go fuck right off right now.
Dude, he's in a lot of shit. But not only that, but he was in a lot of shit with a lot of very famous actors all through the 80s and 90s. So
let's see.
I'm thinking of
Harrison Ford.
No, it's Grace's turn. You settle down, mister.
That's fine. You can do Harrison.
No, I want a Grace one.
Well, I was going to say something that I don't even think would work because it's too old. Because I don't know. John Wayne.
John Wayne. I bet it works. Oh, it didn't like the way I typed. Okay, John Wayne was in 1972's Cancel My Reservation with Ann Archer, who was in Hero at Large in 1980 with Kevin Bacon. So it's a 2.
Holy shit.
All right, so I'm going to throw one out here. Okay. And I haven't tried this one before.
This is bullshit.
So I'm going to say Kevin Bacon 2, your favorite and mine.
Oh, I have one.
Linnea Quigley.
Oh, yeah. Come on, if anybody's been up in the Quigleys, it's the bacon.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
Here we go. Oh, it turns out I can't type. There we go. Oh, my God. Linnea Quigley was in Tourist Trap with Robin Sherwood, who was in Hero at Large with Kevin Bacon. It's another 2. Oh,
damn. All right.
We got to get outside the box.
Cary Grant.
Oh, all right.
Oh, I have one.
Well, no, isn't there like a timeline limit, though?
I don't give a shit. John Wayne was 2.
I don't think so.
6 degrees.
Because, yeah, it was 6 degrees. You can go back to the beginning of film. I mean, in 6 steps. So let's see here. Cary Grant. Cary Grant was in Walk, Don't Run, 1966, with Alex Rodine, who was in JFK, 1991, with Kevin Bacon.
Fuck you.
How about 2 steps.
David Naughton.
We can't even get more than 2 steps.
Clint Howard.
That's going to be one. Watch, he's been in a movie with him. Clint Howard.
Yep.
He'll do anything for a buck.
No. Clint Howard.
Totally old.
Clint Howard was in End of the Line with Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. Holy shit. He was like a one.
Dude, Clint Howard's been
Warwick Davis.
Oh, there you go. Well, I mean, with Star Wars, but the thing is, Warwick Davis
has been in too many movies with too many big casts.
Here we go.
So it'll probably be a two-stepper.
It's a two-stepper. Mm-hmm. Rogue One with Forrest Whitaker. Forrest Whitaker, Air I Breathe, Kevin Bacon.
David Naughton.
Okay.
David Naughton.
We'll try one or two more of these. And then we'll just realize that Kevin Bacon is fairly impressive.
Oh, Robert Englund. That's always good.
Yeah. It's that same generation, though. Yeah. That's exact same. David Naughton was in Little Hercules in 2009 with Elliot Gould, who was in The Big Picture with Kevin Bacon.
Damn, we can't get past 2 degrees.
Audrey Hepburn.
No, you said Robert Englund.
I'm thinking Audrey Hepburn might be a little... Well, because see, again, though, she's actually so big, she's going to have been with everybody who is anybody.
Yeah. You call her a slut?
It's going to be a very short...
It's like, shit.
Two degrees. Audrey Hepburn, They All Laughed. Linda McEwen, Footloose.
Andre the Giant.
Oh.
Oh. See, there's somebody who's only been in a couple movies. Yes. So let's see. Andre the Giant was in Trading Mom with Frank Welker, who was in Balto with Kevin Bacon.
Holy shit.
So they're doing voiceovers, too?
Everything.
What's a voiceover?
Frank Welker's a voice actor.
Oh, that must be Balto.
Balto's a freaking cartoon.
That's a link from a film.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So there you have it.
I need that app. I'm going to waste hours of my life.
Well, what's cool is you can put in any two.
Oh,
here
no.
we go. We're going to go back as far as I know how to go back. We're going to go to, well, I mean, I could name older, but we're going to go
Vincent
to
Vincent Price.
We're going to go to Clarabeau.
Oh,
Clarabeau.
Clarabeau
was in Call Her Savage in 1932 with John Sheehan, who was in Hit Parade 1947, with Eddie Albert, who was in The Big Picture 1989 with Kevin Bacon.
That's only 3 degrees.
I went to 1932 and we found a 3 degree. Well, so there you have it. Kevin Bacon, everybody.
Kevin Bacon is immortal. If you look at his throat piercing debut in Friday the 13th.
Exactly.
And you look at him now.
He is a victim of Jason Voorhees.
Motherfucker does not look at all different.
Now and
he does
iTunes
not look the
music
same.
Commercials with not Britney Spears.
He looks different.
That one?
No.
He does an iTunes music commercial with Britney Spears where he puts on her red latex outfit from whatever that song she wears the red latex outfit in. Anyways,
I don't remember which
he looks better
is.
Than she did, so that's fine.
I'm
seriously. And he's likable. He shouldn't be likable because he looks horrible. He's skinny. He can't grow a full beard. He's all like methed out, splatchy looking.
You guys ever watch the Will and Grace show? I am not a fan of the show.
But I've seen it once or twice.
Excruciatingly repetitive. Yeah. And if you've seen like three episodes,
sporadic.
But one of the guys on there was stalking Kevin Bacon, so he got to play himself, and those episodes were actually really, really funny.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, he's got that self-deprecating kind of sense of humor. He can poke fun at himself.
Yeah. Well, he's a shit
show. He's also a rebel,
and
dude.
He just seems like a really nice guy.
Well, I mean, when you go from, like, was he in Mystic River?
He breaks the laws, dude. He took a whole community that didn't want to dance, and he made them dance, dude. He got them a prom, dude.
You go from Mystic River to Footloose to fucking Tremors to...
Yeah. Oh, Tremors.
The Invisible Man, or whichever one that one was called. Hollow Man. I mean, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Flatliners?
Yeah, that's the one I was trying to think of the name of. I was like, what's that one?
Absolutely the Flatliners.
With Kiefer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been around. He's been in a lot of things.
So does Kevin Bacon distinctly hold this degree honor then?
I don't know how it got. I mean, that's the way you always hear about it.
It's
a big thing in pop culture. Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's like the Chuck Norris jokes, I suppose.
Yes.
It's just like, so at some point, somebody realized, because the thing is that he came in right at the end of the Brat Pack.
Yes.
So he came in right at the end of like that.
He's in the in-between.
Sutherland and, I guess he wasn't even at the end of that. He was full on in that. He just wasn't necessarily part of the pack.
He was kind of this, but he wasn't part of any one group.
You know who else could be similar to him?
I thought
John Cusack. John Cusack might be
absolutely
somebody that you can tie a lot of people in with because he's been in a lot of shit when he was younger. And then his
this guy gets a lot of love on our podcast, and it's all my fault. But I thought of one more.
Who? Jim Michael Vincent?
No, I want to see Kevin Bacon to Casper Van Dien.
Oh, Casper Van Dien. Oh, Jesus. No, Jim Michael Vincent, dude.
See, you can see John Cusack, right. Kevin Bacon, C. Thomas Howell, Ralph Macchio. You can see all those as like the second Brack Pack.
Exactly. But they all shared movies with each other, and then they went on to have huge solo careers, all of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at Iron Man still to this day.
Dude, you know, Robert Downey Jr.
right out of that.
Yeah.
And he's still one of our biggest stars. Yeah. So,
but he was a heralded actor way before Iron Man even happened.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
he did Charlie Chaplin and, you know.
Well, his goes all the way back to, he was St. Elmo's Fire, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was he?
I don't know. Not Downey Jr., but he did a
what am I thinking of?
Less than a hero, less than a hero, something like that with James Spader, where he was like a coked out, like, you know.
Less than zero.
Less than zero.
That's right. Yep.
All right, so who's this Casper Van Dien?
Casper Van Dien was in Born to Ride with Teresa Russell, who was in Wild Things with Kevin Bacon. So, I don't know, I give up.
Son of a bitch.
The one I did try earlier today was, I was like, how about Debbie Rochon? Late 90s or...
Dude, Brink Stevens.
Early 2000s.
Not going to happen.
Julie.
I'll bet it's like two again.
Julie. Was it Julie from Creature of the Black Lagoon? What's her name?
I don't know.
Yes, you do.
Eartha Kitt. He's nowhere near Eartha Kitt.
Yeah, I'll bet he is.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Who's the heroine from Creature of the Black Lagoon?
I do not know her name.
I am stunned by that.
Blonde chick in the way. I know I have like four posters of her.
Yeah,
but
I thought
I
for sure. I thought it was Julie something.
I can walk over there, but I can't read it from here.
Moving on.
Don't know.
Yep. Right. Should we maybe talk about this movie?
Yes.
Hey! Hey! It's not a half bad movie. We should talk about it.
It's actually a pretty good, damn scary ghost.
It super is, and it's scary in the way I like my ghost movies. And I started touching on it earlier, but when I like going back to that black and white, where it's about the terror. Oh, I want more beers too. I see beer going around. I'm in.
Okay.
But I like atmosphere. I like slow burn. I like anxiety and apprehension more than I like jump scares and gross out for a ghost movie.
You know what I was going to mention? Jump scares, because there are jump scares in here. But they're done really well.
I see why.
True.
There are a couple of jump scares, and you're like, yeah, that needed it.
The big one they wanted at the end didn't work at all. No. I felt that one fell flat. But there are a couple in there.
At the beginning, there are, and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Got me on my seat.
So it seems like Hollywood and the ghost movie these days is... I don't know. Hollywood's kind of ruining the ghost movie.
Paranormal Activity bullshit.
Yeah, it's turning into either that shit or... And I actually like these movies, like The Conjuring. But I don't need every goddamn ghost movie from now till the end of time to be The Conjuring. It seems like we've been...
We're in a rut.
Yeah, we kind of are.
We've gotten stuck.
The Conjuring's kind of possession.
That's the thing. We've gotten stuck, and the only way we know how to do ghosts is within a religious implication. Hmm. So it becomes a Catholic church, exorcism, haunting, possession. It becomes those things, which lend themselves a whole lot more to the ghost scare and the gnarly creatures and people getting arms ripped off and shit like that. I don't need all that. Like, I want curtains blowing for no reason. You know, I want creaking doors. I want the chill on the back of the neck. Like, that's...
Kid awkwardly staring in the corner talking to himself.
Yeah.
What I think the
this
greatest...
had a good deal of both.
The greatest ghost story, in my opinion, would contain scene after scene after scene of somebody, like, looking in a medicine cabinet and then closing the mirror, and you just know there's going to be something behind them, but there never is.
Yes.
Ever, throughout the whole movie. But they... would like do that over and over.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Jim Bacon on the couch, where that one part where he's sitting there and you kept looking to sideways he saw and her that nothing's one there and you keep waiting for some to pop up and it's not.
I absolutely love that part. I even took special notes about that part just because I thought that was so cool that he's so desperate to see the ghost again. He's just sitting there staring.
Yeah, where's it gonna be? Where's it gonna be? I don't want to see a ghost again. If I see one, I'm done with it. No,
well,
I don't
see. He's
see
on
again.
That mission. He
wants to figure it out.
Yeah.
Well, and she doesn't even introduce herself for the first time in the right way. If I'm not mistaken.
No. Well, she's surprised. Her very first communication to him is, you can hear me.
Right.
That's her very... Because she... And again, this is kind of how this separates, I think, from a lot of ghost movies, is that she's in there all the time, but people don't see her.
Yeah.
It takes him having this experience. Yeah. Or the little kid who's just a little more sensitive.
And the little kid doesn't really have the power that she needs to be able to do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you
like, got the only thing, she got the little kid to at least suggest her sister as the babysitter.
Yeah.
To get that whole thing rolling.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, the little boy is just like, I don't know, this is my friend. I talked to her. She's dead.
Yes. Whatever.
I thought that was fucking creepy as hell when the little boy is taking advice from a ghost as to who he wants his babysitter to be.
Yes. Well, and he doesn't and think anything like, of it. He's like, Samantha thinks this person.
Yeah, that's the cool thing about him is that he's completely unaware of what he's seeing and how odd it really is. Like the scene in the cemetery when he's walking past the cemetery he's and like, turns to the friend. Wall and is like, hey, hi.
Yeah.
And mom's like, that's not good. And then later in the cemetery where he's talking to, you know, the cop, the guy that's been sent
the cop's
in to give
name
us some,
who also has
yeah,
the
and he's like, okay, bye, Neil. And
yeah, those are all cool.
I was like, bye, Jake. And then you're like, they never told each other their names. Yeah. Like, right. The kid has no idea what he's picking up on.
Little subtle things that were pretty awesome. I liked how they unfold the, like, the mystery of the ghost. Because, so, the sister-in-law, right, does this hypnotic thing on the guy because he's kind of tense and he's kind of a jerk. And she's...
It's a party trick.
It's a party trick. And she just basically says, like, open your mind. Which, to me, I gathered was, oh, suddenly he's now, you know, this gateway because of this, this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was super cool. And then, of course, that unleashes everything. But then when they really... So you just go, okay, so it's a ghost. But then when they really made it interesting, when you're like, wait a minute, this is more... Or we're starting to see why this is a ghost and why it's of interest and there's more levels to it, is when the whole babysitter hears the boy mention the ghost's name.
Yeah.
And so she freaks out. Yeah. And takes the boy and runs She's out the like, door and heads down to the train station.
Goes, she goes to try her. To find her mom because she freaks out.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, wait a minute. Whoa, what does this? Because she's like, when did you talk to her? When did you see her? You know, and you're like, oh, shit, there's something else going on here.
Well, that's because we're talking about 6 months. So from the event that creates our ghost for this film and the resolution that we are currently watching is 6 months' time. Mm-hmm. And that's also a little different. Most, you know, ghost movies are like, in the 1800s, this happened. You know, it's that whole internet meme that you see going around. Like, you know, how come ghosts are always from the 1800s and stuff? You never see, like, some, you know, 15-year-old girl screaming, like, Mom, I want my phone back, you know.
Yeah.
So I liked that quick turnaround, like how fast that was, because all the players that need to be there to solve the mystery are still there because it's only 6 months.
Exactly.
No one's changed.
Happened in their
Everyone
history.
Everyone from the neighborhood still in the same place, same house, same everything, and it's very raw wound for everybody in the community, which I think is kind of cool.
And the community was more connected to it than you realize.
Yes, very much so.
Yes.
There was a lot of things being hidden.
Yeah. So Kevin Bacon's an average Joe in this. He's just a telephone pole wire dude.
Yeah.
He and his wife are pretty normal. They're about to have another kid. He's not too thrilled about the whole idea.
I love when he fucking gets told, and his response is,
bummer.
Yeah.
Which I forgot how much of a word bummer was until I was watching this film last night with Deanne, and I heard my third bummer in the movie, and I was like, wow, I guess we did used to say bummer a lot, like in the 90s.
Bummer, dude.
Yeah.
But,
and she's some sort of, she's like a nurse or a medical, some sort of medical, she was wearing scrubs a couple times.
Yeah, I don't even know that they really,
they never really said, but they showed her in scrubs.
But they're both, you know, working stiffs. They live in a Chicago suburb that's actually, like, nicer than you would imagine.
It's not as shitty as you would think.
Chicago suburbs at this point. Her sister's always around. Her sister's kind of a New Agey sort of astrology kind of, you know.
Her sister called her a witch.
Ileana Douglas.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. And I like, she says, I'm practically a licensed hypnotherapist.
Yeah.
That's her title, I guess, is a practical. So she, after saying you're not supposed to mesmerize someone who's drunk, puts him on hypnosis. And that scene was rad.
Yeah, that like, was.
The way they did the hypnotizing with her talking him through it. You're in a theater. There's the only one there.
The walls are painted black.
Yeah, the screen's all black. Right. There's some writing on it. You drift closer to the writing, and it says sleep or something like that. Yeah. Turns out, I guess, that is a technique.
Yeah, it's...
That's an actual technique. So at the end of that scene, there's like a really sharp musical cue in the movie that they did in case audience members fell asleep during that. Mm-hmm. And apparently multiple did. So in that scene, it's real enough and authentic enough and all that. And I could really actually see that if you're in a dark out theater.
And if people are super susceptible to it.
Absolutely. I could see you getting a little drowsy and needing to be kind of jolted awake.
You're so sleepy.
Yeah.
You're so sleepy. You're tired.
So that was kind of cool. But then that kicks off like these weird hallucinations slash flashbacks.
Oh, fuck. The flashbacks
visions.
During the sex scene?
Yeah.
Fuck that shit. Fucking know, right? Teeth being pulled out. When the hand across the floorboards and the nails broke.
Yeah, exactly.
I was not expecting
they checked
that.
Off all the body horror. You've got fingernails ripped off. You've got him pulling out his own like tooth at one point. Yeah. You've got the safety pin through the hand. Uh-huh. All that kind of her teeth being knocked down on the...
That kind of was a little reminiscent of The Fly on that one with Jeff Goldblum. Totally. I was looking at it going, is this? And I was like, why is he decaying at first? I thought to myself that he was decaying, and I was like, why? Why is he getting visions of this? And then I thought, well, maybe it's because he's reliving the decay of the corpse.
But it's quite a bit of
turned
that.
Turned out
that
not to be that,
she's putting an impression. And again, in the book, it's some of that same kind of stuff is in there where his strength is waning and his will is like seeping away and all that. And he is growing weaker and weaker. Because not that he's feeling what this ghost is feeling, but because the ghost is mad that he's not fixing the problem. So there was like a lot of ghost anger.
Right. And that's where I started thinking, well, how would a, retarded ghost communicate? And that's why he wasn't getting it.
Yeah. I think it's just more that.
It was a subtle thing. I know it was.
I don't think it had anything to do with her developmental disability.
It didn't seem to.
No.
To me.
I think you're really stuck on that. I think it was trying to communicate to another world where
you're really stuck on that.
Quite
you need to
understand.
Get over it. No, I didn't read that they were trying to do that at all. I just thought, how interesting if that was part of it. You know, just like as I was playing the narrative in my own head, like
all I can
that
see
would be...
is like Ben Stiller's character from Tropic Thunder as a ghost.
Yeah,
that's all I'm picking up from this whole thing.
Simple Jack.
Yeah, serious.
Please avenge me.
Yeah, like
you make my eyes rain.
Yeah, it's not like that. Everybody, this movie's not like
instead
that.
Instead, it's more like
yeah. So one of the dynamics I really like is that as he's struggling more and more and more to solve this mystery that this ghost is presenting to him, and also get it. It's kind of a weird duo effect. He wants to fix it because he wants it to stop. You know, it's bugging him. It's freaking him out. It's driving him crazy. But as he's doing all of that, I like the dynamic between himself and his wife and his kid. That's a really cool ghost story dynamic I haven't seen where his kid sees it too.
Yeah. And he's cool with
it. And the kid's handling it fine. He's seeing it and he's freaking out as an adult. And then she's not seeing it. So she's freaking out at both of them because my husband and my kid are really weird. And is it my husband making my kid weird?
Yeah, because they start bonding and she's like, what
the fuck? Yeah. I love the scene where the kid's like, we shouldn't talk about this. It scares mommy.
Yeah. Right in front of
her. They kind of like look at each other and then look back at her. And she's just like, what?
Right.
As if to say, like, you guys are both in on this together and it's just me that
And in fact, it's different because both the Kevin Bacon and the kid are pretty okay with the ghost.
Yeah.
They're not, terribly, like, frightened. They just don't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. In fact, the only time I think they even get annoyed with her is when the little kid's trying to watch TV and the ghost keeps switching it back to Night of the Living Dead. And he's like, he's like, no, I don't want to watch this. Which is funny, too, by the way. How many movies have we reviewed, like The Void and other things, where they have all shown cameos of Night of the Living Dead in the background.
It's
just a bunch of
because
them.
That whole public domain thing where that they didn't set up the rights well at the beginning of that movie, and it went into the public domain very early on. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things that aren't in the public domain, so really you could use any old sci-fi, whatever, but nothing that is as iconic and immediately recognizable that is also free to use.
Right.
So I think that's why we see it in like a fucking gobsmack amount of
movies. It wasn't until this movie that I realized that. I was like, wow, it's been in a bunch.
Yeah. That one and Carnival of Souls. I see Carnival of Souls in a lot of movies because it's also public domain at this point, and it's fairly recognizable. And it's actually a pretty cool movie, too. Just the white faces, the black raccoon eyes, and everything from that film. I see those used a lot, but...
I'll keep an eye on that. I don't know if I've ever seen those.
Yeah. It's pretty good. It's one of those movies that comes on every single one of those like horror collections for $5.99 that you find at like Best Buy, and for some reason people buy. But it's on like every single...
Yeah, I buy the ones that are like the Piranha ones. And like the terrible shark movie ones.
Piranha, that's all right. 3DD.
Trailer Park Shark.
I don't...
He found a copy of Trailer Park Shark and didn't buy it.
No. What? No. What about Dick Shark?
Still haven't found it.
Yeah, one, I praise you on not purchasing the shark movie.
No.
Although I do want to go see Meg with all of you.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, Grace has already said that has to happen.
5 days. Really? Shark Week starts.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Meg.
No, Meg doesn't come out in August.
So. Shark Weeks, those are real.
It starts on the 22nd.
Can't watch that shit. That's it's real.
Hell yeah, you gotta watch that shit. No.
So I like when he goes back to New Agey sister-in-law. And it's like, okay, fix this.
Yeah, he's like,
close the door.
Motherfucking shut whatever witch, you what did you do to me?
Yeah.
Close this shit up.
Knock this shit off. And you know, she's like, well, I didn't do anything. I just opened your mind. You know, that's all. But I like when he goes back to that, and then that almost like does more damage. Like digging around in his brain again, because that's when he sees the new word.
Dig.
Yeah.
It's not sleep anymore the way she set it up to be. It's now dig.
Yeah.
And the other thing I like is that this movie doesn't beat around the bush. Like when he first sees this girl, he A says that's a ghost, and B says she probably wants me to figure out what happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
Like right from the get-go, as you would if some ghost came to you and was like, oh, help me. But I also like when he sees the word dig, and he's like, I gotta start looking for her. And his wife is like, what are you looking for?
He turns to her
and he's like, I think we both know what I'm looking for.
Buried treasure.
The question is just where.
It's all fucking Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah.
All over the place.
Yeah. So I liked that they didn't think that they were going to like surprise you by the fact that this ghost wants him to find her body.
I appreciated that.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah. We're not going to pretend like, why is my husband acting weird? Why? She's pretty much like, oh, there's a ghost here. God damn it. What's going on?
Yeah.
And she's just straight up. She's like, he's losing his fucking mind.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't hide that. She's just like, he's cray.
And it's not until she sees him interacting with the son, and they are sharing the information back and forth, and she's like, oh crap, my son is seeing it too. And then there's a couple of pieces of information that he says that come true, like when he knows what the phone call she gets is going to be before she gets the phone call.
Right.
And she starts learning things that are just unavoidably evident that something is going on and what he is seeing is real.
And back to what you were saying, they kind of hand it to you because she meets that particular odd guy in the cemetery.
Yeah.
And he's like, have your husband come see me.
Yeah,
he's
says, your boy's got the eyes.
Yeah,
Did he get him from his dad? And she's like, uh-oh.
So she shows up and he's like, I told you to send your man, not you, woman.
Yeah. Right?
But she ends up explaining to him. He ends up explaining to her a little bit about what's going on, about the whole, he's got something that he needs to do.
The ghost has something.
The ghost is pissed off.
That he needs to get done for them.
That he goes, how long has this been happening? And she goes, you know, I don't remember what it was, a week or something like that, a couple days. Yeah. And he goes, so what happened to him? Was it like a car accident?
Did he murder somebody?
Yeah, did he murder? Like anything traumatic. And again, they don't have to write that out for us. We now know that a traumatic experience can open you up to this ability for some people.
As much as I've been hanging with you bozos, I should be having ghosts visit me every day.
You probably do. We're just too drunk to know. Yeah.
Exactly.
So alcohol helps.
Pass me that beer. And then they do. And I'm like, thanks.
Helps take care of spirits and grabbers.
Alcohol just helps.
And grabbers.
Don't go home to the bottle, everyone.
Yeah, bring it with you.
Exactly. At least a flask.
I stopped taking notes halfway through the movie because I got pulled into it. I was just like, oh, absolutely. I got to watch this shit.
Well, and I mean, and again, we don't have to go all into, you know, detail of where this goes. That the movie is just as blatant as we are. You know, there's a ghost. Ghost wants him to find her and solve a mystery, and he winds up, you know, getting all wrapped up in that and attempting to do that very thing. And then there's some surprises as to how close he is actually involved to the resolution of this whole thing. And very cool wrap up, I thought.
Yeah,
I thought the last like 10 or 15 minutes felt kind of like it was out of a different.
Well, it was. It seemed to me be sort of the Dusk Till Dawn. You know, at the beginning, it's about these bank robbers and all these like gangster shit, and then all of a sudden, you know, the last 30 minutes of the movie is like fucking vampires. What? This took the opposite effect. It was like, oh, spirit, ghost, something's going on, and then it became sort of like a detective.
Yeah.
Sort of, I've got to figure out the crime.
Mm-hmm. And every little bit player that we have met along the way, who were all just the bit players and the, you know, extraneous cast, all mattered.
Yeah, they all started coming to.
Whoa, wait.
Started coming together.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. But
and we always get to this point. So we say, oh, we don't want to do spoilers. We always get to the point where we're really reviewing movies that have a lot of, you know, cool shit. And then at the end, it was kind of sort of struggle with how to wrap up the podcast because we're like, okay, well, now there's like a lot of cool ending shit I want to talk about, but it's not there. And we mention that almost every podcast, but here we are again.
Spoiler alert, he solves the ghost mystery. Yay!
Yeah.
Oh, I ruined it.
He calls in Scooby and the gang.
Yeah. No, but it does have some cool... This film has a twist without being a twist. It doesn't make you like suddenly realize, oh, what I thought all along is not the case.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that at all.
No.
It's, oh, pretty much exactly what I thought is the case. Oh, but I didn't think it would be
quite like that.
Yeah, that close exactly. to yeah. whatever, whatever. Yeah. Uh-huh. So that was kind of cool. And then it does have like a little kind of six synthy or
kind of at the very synth-y. End when they're driving away.
And that and just before and the bedroom and all that kind of stuff. So there was some things that were a little like kind of, you know.
That's right. I forgot about the feathers.
That was cool. I love feathers.
Grace went out last night. She's like,
that's one of the, that's like one of the best little wraps. Absolutely. Yeah. That and the like, mommy, don't forget your purse and like all that kind of stuff all played into that final scene, which was really cool. But yeah, so it had a really neat wrap up.
I think people got to really pay attention very at the different. End. Yeah. For some of those subtle things like the purse and the reason the purse mattered.
I noticed more of them last night because I watched this movie thinking about like, is this as good as I remember it? Like, I don't know, a month ago or so, a month and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And then I watched it last night to actually sit down and like pay attention to. And I noticed a lot of little
I had the benefit of watching it when it first came out back in the day. And I was surprised. I didn't know anything about it. And I was like, holy shit, this is a really good fucking movie.
They had Blockbusters in Hollywood Video still.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was on the... you know, shelf, and I'm like, and that was Kevin the last time I saw of Echoes, it. Read the little back a little bit, and I'm like, I'll watch this.
Yeah. That was, and then in my brain, Stir of Echoes and that movie Skeleton Key somehow got, like, all jumble-fied. Mm. So even up till a month ago, when I went back to watch this, I really didn't know which one I was watching.
I couldn't make it through Skeleton Key.
Oh, really? I don't remember anything about it Skeleton either. But
I didn't mind
I haven't seen that one.
That's pretty good. I liked it.
A little voodoo-y, was it? Did it have a little Haitian thing to it?
A little
it?
Bit, yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of plantation sort of stuff.
Yes, it was kind of Candyman-ish in a way for me.
It just really was nice to go back to kind of a more classic ghost tale, I thought.
I didn't think it would be so difficult to actually find a ghost story movie. And it has seemed very difficult to pick one. But not because there's like a ton out there.
No, per se, I think it's just again because, like I was saying earlier, my brain is consistently stuck on, you know, George C. Scott Changeling or
Because I'm not interested in The Conjuring or the, you know, Annabella or any of that kind of stuff. You know, much more interested in this vibe of ghost story, and I suppose even like The Ring.
Sure.
It was one of the first.
Oh, absolutely. I like this tale in the sense that it was written in 1958. And it wasn't set, you know, in the future, of course. I don't even believe it was set current in 1958. I think it was set prior to that. But I like the fact that it was written in 58. You can film it in, you know, almost 2000s Chicago. You could also take this exact tale and put it in, like, 1840.
Yeah.
Or you could take the exact tale and put it in, like, a Roman, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, the story itself is extremely, I don't know, basic and not basic, timeless. Is the wrong word. Timeless. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sure.
So, and I think that's important for a ghost tale, because otherwise what do you have? You have fucking internet ghost movies.
Yeah.
You have fucking
yeah.
unfriended dark web bullshit. Like, you know, you have, I mean, and I'm sorry, I haven't watched those movies. Maybe they're fantastic, but I'll never watch those fucking movies because that's the stupidest shit I've ever heard of. So I'm absolutely not going to watch that.
Hey, are we reviewing Fear.com next?
No. No, we're not.
Swim Fam?
Fuck, see what I'm talking about? That's what happens when you take a right. and you write a ghost story for a time.
Well, Swim Fans, no, but
instead of writing
a time, is
a right. really good way to put
yeah.
it.
Perfect example. Thanks for contributing, Juan. That was a great way to wrap
it up. Dude, Fear.com was a piece of shit, and we almost walked out of that theater. Like, we actually stayed and tortured ourselves.
Yeah.
And then we almost did. Like, we got up and we're like, should we go? And then we're like,
maybe it's because of the $13 price ticket and the 14-carat milk duds you bought.
I don't walk out of movies, though. I don't pay the money. I don't care.
Oh, that's why. Because I was there with you. I walk out of movies.
No, you were also there with your lady at the time, too.
Yeah, I think so, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I'm solo, I will walk right the fuck out of a movie. That's not a problem.
Oh, yeah, I won't.
The closest I've ever gotten solo, but I still stayed for some goddamn reason, was this last Mummy movie with Tom Cruise. I literally gathered my shit two or three times, but I was at a McMenamin's theater. I had a burger. I had fries. So that kept me like longer than it should.
That's why I have candy and a damn icy, because I'll sit through the movie then. I got my
because I paid $50 for this box.
Well,
and
then I was like, well, maybe I'll just, you know, go get another beer. So I actually did get up in the middle and leave and go buy more beer or something. Free purse candy.
But that movie was free for $5, whatever.
Here's a fun fact. That movie, The Mummy with Tom Cruise. Written by K-Dog, same guy that wrote and directed this movie.
Too bad.
And he also has written the script for The Bride of Frankenstein, which was...
I saw that's coming up.
It's supposed to. What do you guys think about this whole dark universe thing?
Yeah, fuck it. Mm-mm. Absolutely not.
It had serious potential.
It did, but they took it out of the Universal Monster world.
Absolutely.
Fuck them.
They already ruined it the first time they tried to do this, back with Brendan Fraser and shit. And okay, that first Mummy movie that he did, it was at least entertaining. Yeah. But it was fuck off with that being part of my Universal Monster.
I am going to say, for me...
And fuck Van Helsing. At least.
So Wolfman, the remake of the Wolfman with Benicio del Toro.
Fantastic.
I actually liked that movie.
Yep.
Really. So anybody that hates on that thing, too.
Okay, I'm going to hate just a touch on it. I liked it until became a duel. I didn't care for the two werewolf duel father son thing.
Well, spoilers. No, I'm just kidding.
Actually, I haven't seen that one, so you just ruined it for me.
God damn it.
Well, But as a film, as a feeling, as that gothic.
Oh, no, I liked everything about it except for that element.
Pretty legit. Yeah.
It was definitely. It appears to me you're hating on it. Yeah. Hater.
It was much further than six.
I have devoted myself to the art and the lore of werewolfism far more than you. So I have a certain say that I can say.
You used to roll around in the grass without a shirt on.
I didn't roll around with my dad. I rolled around with my buddy. So there we go.
So that's just weird.
Well, we'll hear you next time.
Creepy instead of incestuous. Congratulations.
Like, I need to down this beer real quick. I don't have enough buzz for this.
So,
shit.
One more time on this beer. This is really good.
Yeah.
You like a Cascadian.
Oh, I fucking love it. In fact, okay. I think it was Sinister.
That was your pick that you brought. Yeah. All right. What do you think of this one?
Oh, I'm digging it.
Up there? Okay.
It's a little bit more bitter than I think I would care for.
It's because it's an angry ghost beer.
It is an angry ghost beer. But when it warms up to 104 degrees, it's actually not bad.
It is actually good at whatever the fuck our room temperature is.
Very good.
We will crushify that here momentarily. Pretty
no man left behind on this.
Nope, absolutely not.
Watch for foam.
Chopping in right now, dude.
All
right,
well, good. I'm glad we got a ghost movie down. I'm glad it was this one. It's a really good movie.
It's definitely missing in the...
It holds up terrifically well. The 90s is a terrible... decade. Well, I won't even go there. It has the reputation for being a terrible decade of horror.
However, but
they kind of stand the test of time. You can kind of watch them whenever the hell you want. It was current enough that you had to deal with cell phones and computers and all that kind of shit.
Well, and any decade you go to, though, you'll find a gem in anything, whether it's music or movies or whatever. There's always something that's really good, and it's always something that's not just pushed on you.
Yeah.
It's something that just kind of falls through the cracks, but sometimes if you see it and you remember it, like this one here, it's like, it wasn't a big budget.
You just
got
to wait for that Dr. Giggles to rise to the top of the...
Dude, you're not watching Dr. Giggles. Did you hear the dentist, dude? I
fucking love that movie, though.
Well, 1999
was... Oh, no, he's Dr.
Yeah.
Yo, you... Yeah, the dentist.
I don't watch the dentist. No, no.
Well, 1999 was a great year for movies, actually. It's considered one of the best years for movies in the 90s.
Really?
That's the end of the decade.
There was a ton of really amazing ones, which escape me right now.
Elaborate. Come on, you made this.
I'd have to get on... Damn it, I got to get on the webs now. Just trust me. 1999.
Do some homework.
Go on the internet. A lot of incredible movies. It's on your phone. Yeah, I thought I would remember them.
He doesn't know what a phone is. Yeah.
Well, now that I know that people listen to podcasts on their phones, then you can just look that up while you're listening.
Somebody does
that right up.
Oh. Still surprises me. Still.
Really?
To this day. Yeah.
Shunned.
Although I listened to my very first podcast on my phone recently.
Oh, that, how do you think I
too.
Yeah.
I put this on my Bluetooth.
I don't even have my music on my phone. I just have my podcast.
Unexplained going. I listen phone, to a bunch of that.
But I also listen to the podcast through
I don't put any music on my phone either. I have a fucking iPod.
I have my music on my iPod.
My podcasts are on my phone.
Mine's all
my podcasts are on my iPod.
I have a tiny iPod.
Google Play, and I put it through my Bluetooth speaker, and while I'm doing something, chores, whatever that, I put on the podcast.
What do you listen to? What podcast do you listen to?
Well, yours. And then that murder one.
Yours?
Ours and the murder one.
I have ruined him.
All right. I like it. I like
my favorite murder.
So, yeah. Boondock Saints.
What? Oh, yeah.
Here we Matrix. Go. Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
Fight Club. Ooh. American Beauty.
I think he was saying Toy for Story the genre.
Well, this I know, but this was just, yeah.
This was a
and then Star Wars Episode 1.
Oh, no, it's on there.
And
you just jumped off the cliff right there.
Brought everything down like 12 notches.
Dude.
The Green Mile?
About 6 degrees.
The Green Mile was a good movie. So Jar Jar Binks, general, you throw fucking Jar Jar Binks in here one more time, I swear to God.
Yeah.
One,
it's so funny that everyone hates on Jar Jar Binks because I see every character in those prequels exactly the same as Jar Jar Binks. That's how much every fucking guy.
I wanted to punch Anakin way more than Jar Jar.
They're all the same.
Yeah.
I want them. Yeah. Mace, whatever the makes Windex, whatever the fuck, all their stupid ass.
Dude, that snake's on fucking, a motherfucking plane, dude.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
I ain't having no motherfucking Sith on, no motherfucking Coruscant.
Every fucking character is a Jar Jar Binks in the
Darth movies. Maul's pretty cool, though.
That's the only good thing about
Darth Maul's legit.
The only good thing about him.
He's the one. Ray Park or whatever, but.
Who?
Isn't his name Ray Park?
Ray Parker.
Yeah. Ray I like Parker him.
Junior.
That's what I was thinking.
Dude, not same guy.
I ain't afraid no ghost, dude.
Ray Park was also a horseman Jedi. And had a lot of the same kind of really cool moves. But the thing is that character, everyone's like, Darth Maul's so cool. Darth Maul's great.
No.
Has there ever been a character written with less backstory than that character ever? Except for maybe Boba Fett.
Mm-hmm.
Which then they gave a backstory and ruined.
But yay! That is why he was so good, is because... The powers that be to ruin him by trying to.
For the bounty hunters, come on. Boba Fett's still the shit, dude.
I love Boba Fett.
You don't think about the
people. It's all about the Bosk. It's all about the Bosk.
Fuck Bosk, dude.
No, it's all about Bosk.
Bosk can do shit, dude.
Dude, Bosk will eat flies out of your living room. That's what he'll do for you.
Yeah, he will.
You invite him over when you leave the windows open and he'll fucking fix that. He's a
dermatologist, dude. A little bit scaly on the face.
He's a lizard.
What about Zuckuss? What about Forlom?
Oh, Zuckuss is Zuckuss looks like the fly.
He looks like the fly, exactly.
Yeah. Before you guys go into...
Oh, what if Bosk ate Zuckuss?
Dude.
He looks like a fly.
His tongue?
Oh, one more reason. Bosk is going to come out on top. No, just saying, you heard it here first.
Dude, Boba Fett has... Dude.
You remember the Star Wars like movies, don't you, Grace?
Dude, Boba Fett can fly with his jetpack, dude.
Yeah. Right, it just bounces off the side of a fucking skiff.
Do the other ones drive slave
the
one?
Bounty hunters?
No, do they fly slave one? No, they don't.
The bounty hunters are equal opportunities. Look at Dengar.
That's a terrible name for a
ship. It is, actually. It is.
Modern
is.
Climate
exactly.
Slavers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But look at Dengar.
Okay,
any one of us could be. Wrap, right? He's the big fat guy in the onesie diaper
so,
suit.
Thanks for listening to Dread Fright and Brew. We're going to go ahead and end this here so you're not subjected to any more of this bullshit. Because this will go on for hours.
Stay tuned after the credits for the rest
find
of this.
Find us called on tidbit. Instagram, the tidbit. Twitter, whatever.
Twitter.
Snapchat.
Nerds.
Yeah, check out our Twitter. It's just going
to
be
Snapchat and our Instaface or whatever.
It's pictures of Bosk only for the next 2 weeks. You watch.
Be lucky you're not me.
I don't even remember
night.
The password
Cheers.
For our Twitter.
No, dude. Boba Fett will kill Bosk any fucking day.
Grace has faded.
Peace out.
Done.
Blue, ha, ha, ha.